Shutdown Day 33. Across the country, the lack of federal funding has affected government employees, Native communities, Americans relying on food stamps, and more. And the next victims of the month-long crisis could be Americans suffering from opioid addiction as the money that funds treatment programs across the country dries up. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we begin today on The Takeaway. Every day in the United States, 130 Americans die from an opioid overdose. In fact, according to the National Safety Council, Americans are now more likely to die of an opioid overdose than in a car crash. Efforts to fight opioid addiction vary widely by state, but federal dollars are critical to many of the programs that directly help people suffering from opioid addiction.
Any program that was using federal grant money or federal money has the potential that that money is not going to get to them right now.
Tom Sinan is the police chief for the village of Newtown, Ohio, and a member of the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition. For his community, a lack of federal dollars during the shutdown hits on-the-ground efforts the hardest.
For us in Hamilton County, it really impacts our quick response team, which is a police officer, firefighter, and addiction specialist that are going out and going door to door after someone overdoses and try to connect them to treatment.
But the term quick response doesn't really give the full picture here. Chief Sinan says this program can often save lives in the long term.
What they are finding is sometimes after, even if someone doesn't get into treatment, a few weeks later they may reach out to them and say, I want help. It gives them literature, it gives them education, it gives them a connection to get that treatment. And when that is stalled, that's people we're not able to go out and make contact with and be able to try to interdict with and try to be able to help.
And stalled is exactly where many programs like this will be, as federal funding is set to disappear.
When you're talking about this epidemic, one of the things that it really holds us back is the up in the air. That's what we faced before we started getting these programs and before the government got involved, the federal government. And now with the government shutdown, it starts adding those questions of what will happen next? Will the money be there? Will the funding be there? What do we do with this program and how do we pay for it? How do we keep it going?
That sense of uncertainty carries over state lines. Head from Ohio to Pennsylvania, for example, and the shutdown's impact on the crisis is visible in other ways. Take Philadelphia.
Housing is a big part of trying to solve the opioid crisis or trying to alleviate the opioid crisis in Philadelphia.
Aubrey Whalen is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer covering the opioid epidemic.
You know, there's a lot of street homelessness here that's directly related to opioid addiction. So a lot of the efforts around kind of getting people well and getting people treatment have also been centered around getting them inside.
And now the shutdown is making those housing efforts much more difficult. That's playing out in one eagerly anticipated and now stalled neighborhood project.
Project Home is a housing poverty and homeless services organization in Philadelphia. It's been around for a really long time. And it is building housing for people, 42 units of housing for people who are recovering from addiction. It's in Kensington, which is one of the hardest hit neighborhoods in the city by the opioid crisis. It has a lot of homelessness, a lot of addiction. They had sort of a groundbreaking last week and mentioned at the very end that they were actually unable to begin construction because they were waiting on paperwork from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which is shut down.
Without critical federal funding, the project is on indefinite hold. But Whalen says Project Home is not the only Philadelphia housing program facing hurdles because of the shutdown.
Another is Pathways to Housing, which is a housing first organization, which is a little bit more unusual. They take people who are still in active addiction. They don't require you to be sober. They just give you a house and connect you to services. And the idea is that the stability of a home makes it a lot easier for people to get into recovery. And that's seemed to be the case for a lot of their participants. So Pathways, for example, is also funded by HUD. And their director says that, on February 1st, they're going to need about $100,000 a month to keep participants in their homes.
There are people who are going to lose their homes in the shutdown. And if they've been in a long-term recovery, this is the kind of thing that may cause them to relapse.
Jeff Bratberg is a clinical professor of pharmacy practice at the University of Rhode Island. And he says the shutdown could also affect funding for the overdose reversal drug naloxone, or Narcan.
There was a giant package of opioid overdose crisis-related bills called the H.R. 6, or the Support Act, that was signed into law before the shutdown. So any of those portions of the act, there are segments of the federal government, they need to implement that. And there is significant naloxone funding in part of some of those bills, and so that will be delayed.
But Bratberg says even where Narcan remains available, in times of economic hardship, people may not be willing or even able to buy it.
Some of those hundreds of thousands of federal employees that may want to acquire naloxone, if their copay is too high or if their insurance doesn't cover naloxone, obviously they're going to be making choices between paying rent or getting heat. Yes, they have insurance, but they may not be able to afford their copay. So people are going to be making choices like that.
Ryan Hampton has been tracking the national picture of what the shutdown means for the response to the opioid epidemic. He's a recovery activist and the author of American Fix: Inside the Opioid Addiction Crisis and How to End It. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
What is the federal picture? What about in D.C. right now? How is the shutdown impacting efforts there?
I'd like to say just because the government shuts down, first of all, it doesn't mean that drug cravings, opioid cravings just stop. I mean, we're having a huge problem with DEA waivers getting through in a timely fashion. I have treatment centers that are calling me anywhere from Texas to Mississippi to Arkansas to New Jersey out here in California who aren't able to treat patients. Treatment centers that have the ability to have the capacity of hundreds and hundreds of patients that are addicted to opioids and need help, they can't get the waivers they need so that they can use life-saving medications such as methadone or buprenorphine. And, you know, on that note, also because the government shuts down does not mean that drug dealers shut down as well. In the last 24 hours, I'm hearing from members of the FBI task force, different drug task force around the country, who aren't able to really do their job. Their efforts are being hampered because a lot of their work relies on confidential informants, folks that lead them up the chain to cartels and larger drug dealers, and they don't have the funds available to be able to pay those confidential informants. Those folks rely on paying their sources, and that money has pretty much dried up, and they're at risk of losing those sources, not just during the shutdown, but forever. You know, it's kind of ironic that the president's using opioids once again as a political football for his wall, and the need, you know, to have this wall to stop the opioids from flowing into the country, as he says. But in the meantime, we're basically going to stop treating people. We're going to hamper law enforcement. And essentially, you know, at the end of the road, some people will die. And I don't think that folks really understand how interconnected, seemingly distant impacts actually are when it comes to this crisis.
You mentioned getting the necessary waivers. Is that because, what's the holdup there? Why can't clinicians get those waivers?
Funding for the DEA has been slowed down. Now, it was, you know, at the beginning it was halted. Those offices have opened back up, but they're already huge waiting lists to get these waivers. And, you know, when the system's open for business, it's already incredibly inefficient. So this shutdown has only slowed that process up. It's actually slowed it up at a rate that's really unacceptable. You just can't say that you're serious about ending the opioid crisis and then essentially turning off these critical services in the middle of a political stunt. It's just unacceptable.
The Support Act, as it's known, or H.R. 6, was a law that was signed last year. Remind us what that was supposed to do and how that's being impacted by the shutdown.
Sure. H.R. 6, you know, was providing new block grant money, programs that were supposed to be made available for treatment, recovery supports, research, housing, employment, all critical services to helping find people help, leading them on the pathway to wellness, but also into sustained recovery. Majority of that money is coming through different federal departments, whether it be HHS or HUD. As we know, a lot of those divisions, departments, federal agencies are closed as a result of the shutdown, and that money is being held up. I'm talking to state drug directors, state directors of mental health and substance abuse divisions, and they can't get access to the money. Now, some of this money is running, you know, for another month or two, but there's just all this ambiguity over the new grant money, whether or not they're going to get it. And I think, you know, particularly one thing that does get lost in this conversation is we have children. We have kids who are also orphaned by parents who have died from overdoses, or parents who suffer from substance use disorder, who are being cared by people and organizations who receive much needed support from the federal government. And those caregivers and organizations are terrified just looking 1, 2, 3 weeks into the distance. They don't know what's going to happen. Transportation, Department of Transportation is another big issue. We have people who are in recovery from addiction, in recovery from opioids, who rely on federally funded public transportation to get to outpatient support every morning. There's a young lady in New Hampshire who's been blowing up my phone and bringing this to my attention that she can't get to her treatment programs, her outpatient treatment programs, because there's no funding for her transportation right now. So all these issues are really interconnected, and it's taking a huge impact on addressing this crisis.
I'm just curious, Ryan, in terms of what was done prior to the shutdown, was that sufficient? I mean, have you seen other real efforts made to combat this crisis?
We were making progress. I mean, we were definitely on the right trajectory. The system was still incredibly inefficient, though. I mean, when we are open for business, we don't have enough services. We don't have enough recovery support services. There's not enough money that's going into treatment. There's, you know, not enough money that's going into research, which is something that has also been impacted by this shutdown, prevention. So the system was already broken, but we were on the right trajectory with HR 6. And now all that good work has just come to a halt, and people really are terrified. You know, one thing that also gets lost in the discussion and conversation are the harm reduction efforts, federally funded needle exchange programs, which have essentially come to a stop right now, a standstill, until the government figures out what to do.
Ryan Hampton is the author of American Fix, Inside the Opioid Addiction Crisis and How to End It. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, with print and marketing solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage and banners. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples.
By Fracture, creating modern photo decor by printing their customers' photos directly on glass. A Fracture is image, frame, and mount all in one, available in a selection of square and rectangle sizes. Learn more at fracturemead.com/takeaway.
And Babbel, a European-made language learning program. Babbel teaches practical conversation in Italian, Russian, Swedish, and other languages. Available in the App Store or online at babbel.com.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.